Hello, this is Wendy Bauer with the Decatur Herald and Review. Today is May 30th, 2016. We will begin today's reading on the front page with a feature article by Tony Reed, Anglers Cast Out Lifeline to Troubled Veterans. From Decatur, Nicholas Harding and Daniel Kennedy are veteran anglers who have become fishers of men. The Decatur friends paddle kayaks to seek everything from crappie to hefty catfish and love the peace and tranquility of bobbing around in the great outdoors. The Army veterans say fishing is popular with ex-soldiers, just like it's popular with everybody else, and opens a channel for engaging fellow vets and maybe striking up conversations. And in that way, perhaps, they can catch some fellow old soldier in time and dissuade him from killing himself. Harding, 31, and Kennedy, 30, belong to an organization with the jolting title, #22KILL. It takes its name from a Veterans Administration report from 2012 that came up with the grim statistic that from sea to shining sea, an average of 22 depressed and desperate veterans were killing themselves every day in this nation. #22Kill draws attention to that and some of the underlying miseries that drive the veteran suicides, such as post-traumatic stress disorder, the malady as old as war itself, that targets soldiers whose eyes have seen too much. Harding and Kennedy are part of a nationwide network of #22Kill members who serve as veteran advocates or battle buddies. They can be reached by touching an interactive map on the www.22kill.com website, and any veteran or active duty soldier in despair, in trouble, can see the phone number of someone nearby who understands and cares. Problems get talked out veteran to veteran, so there is no gulf in understanding where the person in need is coming from. Battle buddies can suggest follow-up lines of help from professional intervention to whatever appears to be needed. The online location of battle buddies is marked by black ring symbols which mirror the actual rings battle buddies wear on their index or trigger fingers. Wearing a ring on that finger stands out when they meet strangers and shake hands, which is the point. A conversation about the ring leads to an explanation of #22Kill and of the symbolism of the ring itself, which is designed to highlight the trigger finger. In the U.S., gunshots are the most common method of suicide, the #22Kill website says. #22Kill wants to black out the trigger finger as a reminder and a way of saying, this needs to stop. Kennedy says the first line of attack in helping someone is always talking. If you are having trouble, it's just comforting to talk to somebody who is a veteran, he said, as his fishing buddy and fellow veteran nods his agreement. Every time I've gotten off the phone with someone knowing that, when I got on the phone, they were in despair, maybe thinking about taking their own life, and now they are not at that point anymore after we talk. I'm good for the whole year after that, says Harding, describing the upbeat feeling he's left with. The Decatur veterans are talking through all this while prepping their kayaks on a recent sunny afternoon for a bout of catfish hunting as hefty waves march across Lake Decatur. The conversation ranges over several organizations that are using fishing to bring some cheer to veterans' lives, and both men are full of praise for heroes on the water. This group introduces veterans to kayak fishing as a way to unwind, shed stress, and relax with friends. Harding and Kennedy, who were both injured in accidents while in the Army and both went through unpleasant experiences with despondency, say being immersed in the joys of fishing meant a lot. It saved our lives, Harding said, which is why they are keen to reel other veterans into the sport while also casting a deeper line to reach troubled comrades. After getting some sponsorship from G.J. Builders Hardware, Paco's Saul Bistro, and Goodfellow's Tobacco Store in Decatur, Harding and Kennedy have had stylish and colorful shirts made they wear in fishing competitions to draw attention to themselves. The shirts are emblazoned with #22kill and Heroes on the Water logos, and also sport the name of another veterans-related fishing event they will both be attending, the Fishing for Freedom Tournament in Quincy, coming up Friday through Sunday, June 3rd to 5th. Volunteer boaters are paired with a veteran, and they take them out to fish for either catfish, bass, or crappie, Harding says. It's an entire weekend, and the organizers raise all kinds of money to pay for it, and we don't pay a dime for room, board, food, or nothing. They really take care of us vets. It's estimated some 175 fellow veterans will be there, and the two Decatur guys with their bright shirts and black rings will stand out and be noticed. You just never know who might be walking by and catch our eye, Harding says. Maybe they've never heard of #22kill, and maybe they need some help. We're always ready to talk. And some photos accompany this article. The first photo, Dan Kennedy in the middle and Nick Harding wearing bright blue shirts, are members of #22kill to raise awareness about the suicide rate among military veterans. Another photo shows veteran Dan Kennedy wearing a hat displaying his military ribbons with the background of the American flag. Also on the front page, state and regional news from Springfield. Lawmakers make little progress. Fantasy sports bill delayed. Budget impasse remains unresolved. Illinois Republican Governor Bruce Rauner and legislative leaders made no progress Sunday on settling an 11-month budget standoff during their latest meeting to try to reach a compromise. Rauner is asking Democrats who control the legislature to pass pro-business legislation and curb the power of unions as a condition of a tax increase to address a $5 billion deficit. But Democratic House Speaker Michael Madigan says he's not willing to pass anything he believes will hurt middle-class families. The current session ends Tuesday. Rauner said Sunday he'll remain hopeful a deal can be reached by then. Madigan says he's willing to continue negotiations through the summer if necessary. In the meantime, House Democrats passed a budget last week that is $7 billion out of balance. Rauner says he'll veto it if it reaches his desk. In other action, legislation to regulate daily fantasy sports betting in Illinois was shelved Sunday after the proposal became mired in vote-buying allegations. Democratic Rep. Michael Zalewski, one of the bill's sponsors, told colleagues in a House committee Sunday that he would not put the proposal up to a vote before the legislature adjourns its spring session. This became a distraction to an unhealthy degree, Zalewski said, without referencing the allegations that another lawmaker made last week. Democratic Representative Rita Mayfield had said she became privy to an email in which a lobbyist working for FanDuel and DraftKings suggested he could get support from members of the House Legislative Black Caucus in exchange for contributions to their foundations. Mayfield made the allegation during a hearing on the bill and said she didn't feel comfortable voting on the proposal. The email basically alleged that in exchange for considerations, donations, that he could guarantee votes. That's illegal, she said. During the hearing, Mayfield didn't elaborate on the contents of the email, didn't say who it was sent to or who showed it to her. She has declined to speak to the Associated Press about it. A spokesman for FanDuel and DraftKings denied that they participated in the vote-buying overture, Mayfield alleged. We categorically reject the implication that DraftKings or FanDuel would partake in such behavior. We do not condone this type of activity. It's simply not how we do business, here or anywhere in the country, spokesman Jeremy Coudon said. The company supported the legislation in Illinois, where they say 2 million people participate in the games. That makes the Illinois the third largest market for the contests, according to the Fantasy Trade Association, which represents DraftKings, FanDuel, and 300 other operators. The bill would have set guidelines for who could participate in the contests, barring any company employees and anyone under 21. The bill also imposed taxes and licensing fees. Several states have deemed the contests illegal gambling, and lawmakers nationwide have responded by trying to set regulations. Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan said in a December advisory opinion that betting through sites like DraftKings and FanDuel is illegal, but to shut the sites down in the state, someone would need to challenge their legality in court. Zalewski said he would continue working on the legislation and trying to convince his colleagues the state needs regulations for the online contests. Earlier Sunday, a House committee endorsed automatic voter registration in Illinois, but the measure will not move to the House floor. The executive committee approved the idea Sunday, but the sponsor, Representative Robin Gable, an Evanston Democrat, has proposed additional changes at the request of the agency most affected by the legislation, the Secretary of State's office. The plan would allow residents interacting with state agencies to get automatically registered. Getting or updating a driver's license from the Secretary of State would be the main place. Democrats say it could add 2 million voters to the rolls. Republicans say it's aimed at getting more Democrats registered and voting. Gable hopes to get the committee's okay on changes today and get a House vote and Senate concurrence before Tuesday's end-of-session deadline. The plan would allow residents interacting with state agencies to get automatically registered. And moving to the local page, City sets new cleanup dates. Article by Allison Petty, Herald and Review staff writer. Having collected more than 18 tons of garbage during its last cleanup event, the City of Decatur has scheduled two more. The next dates are 2 p.m. and 6 p.m. Wednesday, June 22nd, and 8 a.m. to noon, Saturday, September 10th, both in the Decatur Civic Center parking lot. Large items and tires will be accepted, but not electronics or paint. I think one of the things that the Decatur City Council has talked about is neighborhood improvement and neighborhood beautification. This falls in line with that stated goal, Assistant City Manager Billy Tyus said. Based on the turnout, we can see that there's a need for it. But the most recent event, April 14th, residents dropped off 18.98 tons of material, the contents of 17 large roll-off dumpsters. R&R Services disposed of 540 tires at a discounted rate. The number of tires is mind-blowing, Tyus said. I never thought that there would be that many stray tires out there. The total amount the city spent at the April 14th cleanup was $1,305, which included the dumping fees, supplies, marketing, and tire disposal. Future events will likely cost more, as the city has already exceeded its donation of 15 roll-offs from advanced disposal. City employees did not turn anyone away, as they previously had to do during one of the four citywide cleanup events held in neighborhood parks last year. Rochelle Irons, Director of Neighborhood Services, said the Civic Center parking lot provided a better location logistically. I think as long as we see the need for it and we have the support from the community and all the partners and, of course, the funding, then we'll continue to have them, Irons said. If we find that there's a need for more, we'll try to plan them as such. While the city's events will not accept electronics, Macon County Environmental Management has scheduled an electronics recycling drop-off from 9 a.m. to noon Saturday, June 18th, at Progress City USA on the Richland Community College campus. The event will be limited to 900 cars for financial reasons. For more information, visit macongreen.com. And an article from Decatur by Valerie Wells, staff writer for Herald and Review. Kids, this is Families Make a Splash at Fairview Pool. Kids and pools just go together. Just ask cousins Terrell Eskridge and Peyton Menninger, both 11. They visited Fairview Park Pool on Sunday with family, and in spite of the water being a bit cold this early in the year, they had a grand time. "It's cold," Terrell said, "but you warm up. I like being in the water, underwater, because then it's like I'm a fish, Peyton added. The pool opened for the season this weekend, and manager Brooke Vadi said Sunday was a good day, in spite of a bit of a slow Saturday. Sunny skies and warm temperatures helped bring out families like the Campbells, which includes 3-year-old Tyler, Jocelyn, 4, and Jordan, 7. Mom, Toni Campbell, said she likes the Fairview pool because it's clean and the staff makes sure it's safe by insisting on proper pool behavior. It's a good, clean pool, and it's fun for the kids, Campbell said. The lifeguards are trustworthy. They're very strict on the behavior that's allowed here. You know you're not going to expose your children to certain behaviors. I feel comfortable having my young children here. Regular hours for the pool are noon to 2:30 p.m. Monday through Thursday for open swimming, with family swims 2:30 to 5 p.m. and 7 to 9 p.m. Tuesdays and Thursdays. Open swim is noon to 6 p.m. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, with family swims 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. Saturday and Sunday. Swimming lessons will be available beginning on June 6th. Daily admission is $5.75 for adults, $4.75 for kids and seniors, and kids 2 and younger are free. Season passes are available for singles, couples, and families, or a 10-visit pass. Something new this year, Vadi said, is a special area for private parties that will include a shade, canopy, and chairs, though you can also rent the whole pool for a private party. The splash pad, enclosed by a fence with a gate, offers a place for parents to take small children and let them run through sprinklers, and will also have chairs for the adults to use. The sand volleyball area will host tournaments this year, Vadi said, which is another new thing, and the beach area in the shallow part of the pool has stirred a lot of interest. The shallow ends and starts with zero depth, which parents of little ones like, because the kids can play in the water and get wet without being in too deep. And the sand is almost like being at the beach. Moms can lay out and get a tan and still keep an eye on the kids, she said. And the photographs accompanying the article show cousins Peyton Menninger and Tyrell Eskridge playing in the shallow pool on Sunday. They're splashing each other with a bright blue sky behind them. A lifeguard sitting up on a lifeguard perch is captioned, "Regular patron Toni Campbell likes Fairview because the staff is alert and keeps her kids safe. Two lifeguards watch over one section of the pool while several more walk around the perimeter." And finally, another beautiful picture of light blue water with the sand around the edge of the pool and a bright blue sky. Fairview Park pool drew a number of swimmers on Sunday, and because the chairside view is so popular, manager Brooke Vadi said a lot more chairs are on order and will be available for use shortly. And Chris Lusvardi, a Herald and Review staff writer, brings an article from Decatur, "Richland Expanding Culinary Student Opportunities into Chicago." Students interested in the food industry have a new opportunity to continue their education beyond Richland Community College. Richland has entered into an articulation agreement with Kendall College in Chicago, the first relationship of its kind for its culinary arts program. The agreement opens opportunities for students to learn in a world-class city, said Chef Brian Tucker, director of the Richland program. "It's one of the biggest food cities in the U.S., Tucker said. "The possibilities are really endless. It gives the students a great entryway into the market." Tucker said it provides a great opportunity for students to continue building on what they learn while they are at Richland. Students interested in culinary arts and hospitality management will be able to pursue a 4-year degree, something Richland doesn't offer, said Doug Brower, Vice President of Economic Development and Innovative Solutions. After earning an Associate of Applied Science degree at Richland, they'll be able to start at Kendall with junior standing, and classes will transfer seamlessly, Brower said. "We needed to link We needed that link to Chicago, Brower said. It will be nice to have a strong relationship and we can benefit from each other. The relationship could lead to faculty and student exchanges for various learning opportunities, Brower said. Like Richland with Bistro 537, Brower said Kendall has a student-run restaurant in operation. The arrangement will be effective with the 2016-17 academic year, he said. Richland is expanding its reach into the culinary market, Brower said. He said it is involved with such projects as the National Foodworks Service Business Incubator in Decatur. Tucker said the food industry and culinary arts continue to be strong. He said Richland is looking to provide its students with as many of the pieces as possible to the puzzle in order to be successful in the industry. Trends are emerging in the urban food industry, such as utilizing rooftop gardens that students can learn about while in Chicago, Brower said. He said the relationship with Kendall has developed from involvement with Farm Illinois, a recently formed statewide organization. Brower said the group has been addressing work development issues in the food and agriculture industry with a goal to develop a strategic plan on the topic. And from the opinion page, Trump's Take No Prisoners strategy. If Donald Trump prefers combatants who aren't captured, as he once mocked John McCain, he apparently doesn't believe in taking prisoners either. The exception to the rule is obviously truth, but then veracity is no hindrance to the conspiracy-minded. Now, Trump points out, he didn't say this because I don't think it's fair, but lots of other people are saying that the Clintons had something to do with Vince Foster's 1993 death, which was ruled a suicide. Lots of people have also said that Barack Obama was born in Kenya, and who led that long march toward Looney Town? None other than Trump. Reality check. If Obama were born in Kenya, and if the Clintons could so handily orchestrate a murder with impunity, then couldn't they have been able to pull off something as simple as a rigged birth certificate, eh? Trump is just clever enough to deflect responsibility for these long-ago defanged conspiracy theories by shifting blame to others. He's done the same in rallies. If someone in the crowd shouts an untoward remark about a political opponent, Trump looks amazed and says something like, "Did you hear what he just said? I would never say that Ted Cruz eats puppies for breakfast because I don't know that for a fact, but this guy just did." The template has served him well. Fans go wild and Trump has cover. But importantly, the sentiment has been released into the atmosphere and absorbed into the limbic systems of the masses. Now that Trump has cracked the lid on Foster's coffin, Clinton haters can luxuriate in gossip, insinuation, and lies while entertaining the fantasy that they're only interested in the truth. And who shall be the arbiter of that truth? Usually, we rely on the objective third parties, the media, or the courts. And though few people are naive enough to believe that investigators, judges, reporters, and editors can't be corrupted, the reality is that Foster died by his own hand. This was the conclusion of the United States Park Police, the Justice Department, the FBI, the Congress, Special Counsel Robert Fisk, and Independent Counsel Kenneth Starr. Now, really. If Trump were so concerned about the Clintons' alleged role in Foster's death, why then did Trump continue contributing to Clinton campaigns and causes? And why did he invite them to his third wedding? Would it be because he consorts with murderers and thieves? I would never say such a thing because that would be unfair, but I hear a lot of people saying this. A lot. The Clintons surely have had an imperfect record, and gallons of ink have been spilled on the graves of their past histories. Some people will believe that they want what they want to believe, facts to the contrary. But whoever would have believed that Starr, he of the 1998 examination of Bill Clinton's sex life, would find common cause with his former target? For those too young to remember, Starr's work revealed every lurid detail of Clinton's relationship with Monica Lewinsky and ultimately led to impeachment proceedings. Speaking recently on a panel, Starr said it was unfortunate that Clinton's legacy is viewed only through the lens of unpleasantness. There are certain tragic dimensions which we all lament. That, having been said, the idea of this redemptive process afterwards, we have certainly seen that powerfully in Clinton's post-presidency life. Starr has perhaps softened with time, or maybe his distance from Washington, both as Dean of Pepperdine University School of Law and more recently as President of Baylor University. Christians, after all, believe in redemption and forgiveness, and Starr is a devout Baptist. Then again, maybe the former investigator's own recent experience as a target has opened his heart. This week, news broke that Baylor's Board of Regents voted to demote Starr amid a sexual assault scandal involving the school's football team. The nastiness of politics knows no physical boundaries, and campus punishments, we've observed, don't always fit the crime. One thing we can be reasonably sure of is that Starr discovered evidence that the Clintons were involved in Foster's death, he wouldn't have hesitated to present his case. That he didn't should put to rest any continuing nonsense to the contrary. The case is closed. Would that this election were too, but the long, hot summer awaits. For refreshment, we can entertain the prospect of Baptist brothers Clinton and Starr dipping their toes in Nantucket's chill waters, sipping wine, and bemoaning the sad state of political affairs. The coarseness, the anger, and might we add, the irony of it all. And from the local page, the A3 briefs. From Decatur, Webster Cantrell to Mark Hundredth. Webster Cantrell Hall will celebrate its 100th anniversary with a special family reunion for previous residents and employees on Friday and Saturday, June 3rd and 4th. There will be an open house Friday from 4 to 7 p.m. at 1943 East Cantrell Street and a picnic at 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturday at Nelson Park Pavilion 2. For more information, call 217-423-6961. Decatur, tower removal to close street. Removal of a tower from nearby roof will close the 100 block of West North Street between Church Street and the east edge of 150 West North Street from 7 a.m. Wednesday, June 1st through 6 p.m. Friday, June 3rd. From Chicago, man files suit against police officer and the city. A Chicago man who accuses a police officer of punching him while handcuffed 2 years ago is suing that officer, the police department, and the city. A lawsuit filed Sunday in federal court on behalf of Rayshon Gartley says Officer Clausel Gauze violated his civil rights when he was struck at Jackson Park Hospital as Gartley was undergoing a mental health evaluation. Surveillance video captured the incident. The lawsuit seeks unspecified damages. Official misconduct charges stemming from the incident were recently filed against Gauze. State prosecutors have said Gartley punched Gauze and Gauze hit the handcuffed Gartley later in retribution. And we'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, May 30th, 2016. Please stay tuned.